This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar-Free. First-round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
It's not coming from Brett Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you, Joe. I'm Ian Ozan, WWL First News. Now back to Tommy Tucker on WWL AM FM and .com.
You know that old saying, never let the truth get in the way of a good story?
Yep.
This, I promise you, is true. My word of honor, this is true. Courtney's story about cremation.
Mm-hmm.
I went to a service one time where they had a remembrance in the parlor, right? And they had the person cremated. It was a green and white, if I remember correctly, urn that the person was in.
Mm-hmm.
Then the proceedings moved to the chapel where they were going to have a service. And they were a couple of minutes into it, and they realized that they had not brought the guest of honor in from the parlor. And somebody had to go get it, and they had a laugh about it, saying the person was always late to everything anyway. So always make sure that the guest of honor is where they're supposed to be, right?
Yes, indeed, especially at a funeral.
Yeah, exactly, especially at a funeral. We'll take a break and back. Talk to Ted Rossman, Bankrate Senior Industry Analyst. I'm a little bit confused about median and average and cash in banks and who has enough money to pay for expenses. We'll sort it all out when we return here on WWL. 7:15 on this Thursday morning, September the 11th, we'll talk with Eric Nisbet next half hour about Charlie Kirk and how we're in such divisive times now, and yet back at 9/11 we were all together. Right now we're talking to Ted Rossman, Bankrate Senior Industry Analyst, about how much the American household in transaction accounts. Hey, Ted, how are you?
Good morning. Doing well. Thank you.
I got to ask you here to go gentle with me because this is the exact thing that caused me to leave accounting and go into communications because my head is not one that wraps around math easily. But with that being said, let's talk about what is a transaction account and what do the numbers show?
Yeah, we're talking about savings accounts, checking, money market, you know, those kind of bank accounts. The median American has $8,000 in these accounts, according to the Federal Reserve. The average is a lot higher. I mean, that gets skewed by the high end. $62,000 is the average. Really, what's important for everyday people to know about this is that, sadly, only 46% of U.S. adults have enough emergency savings to cover 3 months of expenses.
That's what confused me, because say that part again about the average American.
Yeah, 46% of U.S. adults have enough emergency savings to cover 3 months of expenses. That's what's significant here. I mean, no shame, right? Life's expensive. We get it. But it's also really important to chip away at that goal. You may not get there overnight, but, you know, by saving money every paycheck, that's going to help you get there. This is your buffer against high-cost credit card debt. Usually when people get into credit card debt, it's a medical bill, it's a car repair, it's a home repair, it's groceries and other day-to-day bills outpacing your paycheck. It's not usually something silly like a shopping spree or a vacation. It's really important, though, to systematically chip away at this, set money aside from every paycheck. That's important.
Somebody texted in, we use these terms, said sometimes people don't understand. They don't know what a money market account is. How is that different than a checking or a savings account?
It's in this context, it's basically synonymous with savings. You know, there are brokerage money market accounts that are basically a place to put your money before you invest it in stocks or bonds. And it's kind of this holding pen, and that can be invested by the securities firm in short term bonds, very safe government investments. Some banks use money market almost interchangeably with mm-hmm. savings, where, you know, again, they may be making a little money on the back end by investing your money in short term government securities. But, you know, it's essentially a savings account or a holding pen of sorts.
Somebody texted in. The audience is embracing this topic, man. I'm telling you, somebody texted in. How do you define emergency expenses enough to cover 3 months of emergency expenses? What would that include?
We're basically talking about whatever your monthly expenses are, kind of bare bones here. You know, we're talking about if you lose your job or, you know, sadly you have some other kind of crisis and you really need the money. So this isn't really extras. This is more, some people kind of quip that it's your ramen noodle budget. You know, it's kind of like if you were to cut back to the bare minimum, rent, mortgage, car payment, utilities, you know, what are some of those fixed expenses that you have every month? And ideally, a lot of experts recommend that you have 6 months worth of expenses in the bank. So, you know, if you were to lose your job for 6 months, you'd still be able to pay for all of those daily necessities. You got to start somewhere, though. I mean, even that first $500 or first $1,000 can be a valuable buffer. A lot of times when we see people dipping into these funds for unexpected events, it's often like $1,000, $2,000. You know, chances are, I mean, unless something really big happens, like, you know, you need to replace your roof or something. I mean, oftentimes it's more of the, you need new tires, you need a new fridge, you need a new washing machine, you know, something like that. But this is also to guard against unemployment and basically just have some rainy day fund in place.
When you start talking about mean, median, and then I threw in mode as well, it brought me back to my statistics days in college, which were the best 7 years of my life, Ted, just so you know. So the average person, wait, the mean is $8,000. The average is 62. That's skewed by the people that have a lot of money. So does that mean that half of the people in America have 8,000 liquid, the other half don't, or have more than that?
That's right. Yeah, that's the median is 8,000. So yeah, basically half have more, half have less. You know, this breaks down pretty much as you would expect by income level. I mean, definitely the more income you have, the more savings you're going to have. The age stuff is interesting. People under 35 are averaging 20,000 in these savings accounts. Younger boomers, you know, those in the mid-60s to mid-70s, they have about 100,000. So, I mean, again, wherever you are on this spectrum, certainly you want to bump it up if you can. But we do want to talk about practical ways to do that, because it's easier said than done, right? Like, everybody would love to save more.
Let me take a break, Ted, and we'll talk about practical ways when we come back. Real quick, though, I will ask you, since we're talking about statistics, not to get too far into the weeds here, because I'm going to have nightmares. Do you know what the mode is in this study or not, what the most frequent number is?
I'm not sure what that is. That wasn't reported in the Fed data.
All right, I was just showing off that I still knew what mode was. 720 traffic now.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar-Free. First-round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app, available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
WL. 726, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Ted Rossman, our friend, Bankrate senior industry analyst. New study shows that half of the people in the country have less than $8,000 in the bank. Half have more, and a lot of those that have more have a lot more than that. Right, Ted? Accurate?
That's right, yeah. The average is all the way up to $62,000.
So when you talk about having enough to cover expenses, I'm thinking about a leaky boat in that before you can you start bailing out water, you got to stop the leak, right? You got to stop the water coming in. That goes to people being overextended. So not only do you have to try to save some money, but you have to not maybe buy as much car as you think you can afford because you're talking about car note, house note, et cetera, right? You have to live within your means?
Yeah. That's a fixed expense that is a big drag for a lot of people. Yeah, we see as the average new car price has pushed higher, close to $50,000, we see the average new car payment is something like $750 a month. And these are fixed costs. And this is what we're talking about. Like if you lose your job, you're still going to have to pay that. So, you know, setting money aside in advance is just so valuable. One of the best ways to do that is to have automatic transfers every payday into a dedicated savings account. You may already be doing this for retirement with a 401k. Mm-hmm. Try to replicate that same process. Have money transferred into a savings account. That's your rainy day emergency kind of fund. You might also consider trying to up your income, maybe through a side hustle or maybe some overtime or a higher paying job. Or, I mean, I know it's easier said than done, but every little bit counts. And you can also try to raise some extra money by selling stuff you don't need or cutting your expenses. I'm not saying you can't have any fun or you need to do these things forever, but these are valuable ways that can literally help you sleep better at night if you have this protection in the bank.
I have nothing against luxury vehicles, okay? Absolutely nothing against luxury vehicles. But when I see the median bank account balance is $8,000 and I see the number of luxury vehicles that are out on the road, it seems like a lot more people than half of the United States are driving luxury vehicles, and you really do need to go into it with a feeling of reality and what you can really afford, right? Is there a percentage as to what, when it comes to car note, like what you should look at as percentage of income?
You know, oftentimes we talk about total debts not exceeding 36% of your income, mm-hmm. so roughly a third. That's total debt, though, so you got to talk about your car, your mortgage. I would even include rent in that. I mean, mm-hmm. that's the largest expense for many households.
Utilities.
You know, you don't want those basics. Yeah, I mean, you could certainly build that into the calculation as well. Yeah, you don't want to get overextended. A lot of people get upside down on these car notes and they owe more than the car is worth. And then it's hard to get out from that. So, you know, maybe it makes sense to drive what you have a little bit longer. You know, maybe it makes sense to get a used vehicle, although those prices have gone up as well. You know, some of what's really hurt people in the car market is we're getting bigger cars, nicer cars, but also all the technology that's built into these. I mean, even relatively small fixes like a side view mirror. I mean, if it's wired in with all this other technology and it's got all these bells and whistles and, you know, cameras and lights and, you know, these are all reasons why it's expensive to buy cars. It's expensive to fix them. Insurance is extremely expensive. Some of that is the natural disaster component as well as just the cost of parts and labor. And yeah, the car is taking up an increasingly big part of a lot of households' budgets.
So when it comes to, I guess, a good rule of thumb is don't even look at the money. Have it deposited into the account first.
There's definitely something to be said for that out of sight, out of mind thing. If you can just do it automatically, you're less likely to miss what you don't see. Research has also shown that people are more likely to stick with a savings goal if they have separate accounts. And you can even put a name on it. I mean, you could have several sub-accounts at a lot of financial institutions. You could have your emergency fund. You could have a vacation fund for that trip you really want to take, or maybe you're saving to buy a house, or, you know, whatever the goal may be, you're less likely to dip into that if it's at arm's length. You know, a lot of these online savings accounts have the best rates, up to about 4.25%. You can get the money when you need it, but it often takes a business day or two. Sometimes being at arm's length is actually a valuable thing because it's there if you want it, but you're not as tempted to dip into it on a daily basis.
I got to take 1 second here, Ian Ozan. We'll be a minute late with news here, but somebody texted in and said, I have $1 million in my 401k, so that's some consolation, but no short-term savings and lots of credit card debt. I don't know how old this person is or what the penalty would be, but it would seem as though that credit card debt would be the first thing to take care of rather than the 401k. Thoughts, Ted?
One idea might be to temporarily pause or at least scale back those 401k contributions.
Or maybe borrow from the 401k if you can to pay off the credit card?
That's a possibility. You know, there are some hoops to be aware of. Like, you know, if you leave your job for any reason, you have to pay that money back very quickly. Otherwise, you owe taxes. You know, maybe the path of least resistance is to temporarily contribute a bit less to the 401k and then put more money into debt payoff and short-term savings. I mean, it's great to have that much money set aside for the long term, but if you're paying a 20% credit card rate in the short term, that may not be great. And then also, that long-term investment isn't going to pay the bill if you need a short-term fix, like a new fridge or a new set of tires. So it's important to balance these different priorities.
Thank you, Ted. I just wanted to address that real quick. Thank you. We'll talk about Charlie Kirk when we come back. Right now, time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Ian Ozan.
Thank you, Joe. I'm Ian Ozan, WWL First News. Now back to Tommy Tucker on WWL AMFM and .com.
Credit cards were never meant to be a financial instrument. It's meant to be convenience where you charge it and you pay it off every month. This person that texted in, if you're carrying credit card debt, the first thing you need to do is get out of that because you're paying more for that than you really an investment for the most part. Generally, you can't say ever, but then an investment would yield. So the first thing you need to do is get yourself out of that credit card debt. We come back. We talk to Eric Nisbet. He's a professor of policy analysis and communications at Northwestern University. We'll talk about Charlie Kirk and political rhetoric when we return on WWL. 7:45, quarter till 8, Tommy Tucker, WWL. I got to be honest, Charlie Kirk was not in my sphere of influence, and that's because of the algorithms and who you follow in this. And I have so many things across my desk, from autism, which we'll talk about later, to weight loss drugs, which we've talked about before, and everything in between. Eric Nisbet joins us now, professor of policy analysis and communications at Northwestern University, to talk about political violence in the United States and rhetoric. How you doing, sir?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Tell me about Charlie Kirk, first of all. Who was he for people that like me that were not very familiar with him?
Charlie Kirk was a widely popular online influencer and political personality. He's really of this new generation of young conservative influencers that have really made inroads among young people that have a very meaningful presence online, who does public tours around college campuses and has really been at the forefront of conservative outreach to younger people.
Did he ever engage in any kind of dangerous rhetoric or violent rhetoric or anything like that?
You know, he
ever is a strong word because, you know, that's proving a negative.
Right,
but as far as
right.
you know,
I'm not, as far as I know, so. Charlie, I mean, he obviously had very hyper-partisan rhetoric. Mm-hmm. And, you know, after the assassination attempts, for example, like many, both people on the left and the right, after Trump's assassination attempts, he also promoted on his accounts unverified information or speculation about an inside job, or it being some type of, you know, government setup, et cetera. But was he, an extremist in that regard? No.
And along those lines, before people start rushing to judgment about them or this or that, we know nothing about the motive of the person that killed him, correct?
Yes, we don't know if it was politically motivated or not. though it seems likely considering his profile. And it was at a rally on a college campus. But right now we know nothing about the shooter whatsoever. The manhunt is continuing.
When it comes to the person that tried to, the shooter that tried to assassinate President Trump, did he ever really have a political agenda, or was he just a nut job?
Well, there was actually two assassination attempts.
That's true. I forgot about that.
Trump,
yeah.
As you recall, yeah. Right? The first attempt, the motives are unclear. There might have been, in both cases, likely some level of mental health issues. They haven't really identified a clear motive. The first shooter's politics were unclear, somewhat heterodox in terms of both leaning left and right in different ways. The second shooter seemed more clear that they definitely were motivated by more partisan orientations, at least I say attempted shooter that they caught before he could actually do serious harm. So, in both cases, we can see that politics was definitely a part of the motivation.
Every time somebody goes through something, they think it's the first time. But really, does what's going on now even compare to the turbulence that happened in the 60s?
Well, what's going on now, the 60s was very turbulent, and there was several assassinations, of course, Martin Luther King and Kennedy, but Kennedy's, right?
Yeah.
But, what's a little different now is the motivations behind the violence. So, political violence has a long history in the United States. There was brawls in Congress in the 19th century and duels. But what we have now is that violence is based upon more Republican, Democrat identities, liberal or conservative. It's not extremists on the right, extremists on the left, eco-terrorists or KKK white supremacists. It's basically been driven by our partisan identities. And that's worrisome, where we start solving our differences not at the ballot box, but through violence.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back. And I want to talk about the role of social media in all of this. Eric Nisbet is our guest, professor of policy analysis and communication at Northwestern University. We're talking about the murder of Charlie Kirk yesterday, the governor of Utah calling it a political assassination. 7:50, 10 till 8. Traffic now, WWL. 7:57, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Eric Nisbet, our friend, professor of policy analysis and communication at Northwestern University. Already on X, I'm seeing conspiracy theory after conspiracy theory after conspiracy theory. Before we get into that, in terms of rhetoric, is social media a big part of this and algorithms and constantly dread scrolling, whatever they call it, where you keep doom scrolling. Thank you, Coleman, where you keep feeding into the echo chamber.
Yeah, social media is definitely a part of the equation, but I wouldn't focus on it exclusively.
Mm-hmm.
Hyper-partisan media, left-wing media, right-wing media, and our own sort of political rhetoric from our political leaders. This all combines to create an information environment which drives support for political violence, primarily through dehumanization of the other side. When we see the other side as evil, we believe that violence is morally justified.
First thing, they teach in sociology is when it comes to war, you dehumanize the other side, right? You make them krauts or you make them nips. Pardon my language. I'm not trying to offend anybody. I'm just saying that that's what you do to dehumanize them, to make the soldiers realize they're not killing a human being. And it's kind of the same thing here where you demonize the other person and you make it more than just somebody who sees things differently than you do, right?
Exactly. That is exactly true. And then people can engage in violence and still feel they're moral and they're a good person, even though they've killed another person.
So does any good come out of this, or does this lead to more of the same thoughts?
I don't think anything good comes out of this. We've had, out of the assassination attempts, the tragic killings in Minnesota, we haven't seen anything move the needle. If anything, violence is becoming worse, and it's actually spreading
to the local level, the state level, the town level, where local officials are being threatened and harassed on a constant basis.
Did anybody see this coming with Charlie Kirk, somebody shooting him from a long distance?
I don't think anyone saw this coming.
And the reason, Professor, is in the minute that we have left, what does it portend for future appearances by people that can be polarizing political figures on either side?
Right. You know, this type of violence, these type of threats, the research shows that political figures, our politicians, our leaders, are less likely to meet with constituents, less likely to engage in controversial issues, less likely to run for election. So it's really going to have it's really having a long term effect on the quality of our politics and who represents us.
Thank you. I appreciate your time, Professor Eric Nisbet, Professor of Policy Analysis and Communication at the prestigious Northwestern University. We'll come back. We'll talk to Dr. B, Dr. Brent Wallace with People's Health. He always has some great health advice for us. And we'll talk about 9/11 with David Chanzer, Professor of Public Policy at Duke.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar-Free. First-round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.